Today is Rizal Day. This is the anniversary of the execution of Jose Rizal, 1896. And so it's a regular holiday. If they're keeping track of the kinds of holidays they are, this is a regular one. And it's fitting, I think, very fitting that a nation honor its national heroes. It's striking to me that Andres Bonifacio is, his holiday is on his birthday, and Rizal's holiday is on his death anniversary. Says something, I suppose, about the way that they're honored. One thing striking about Rizal, and this is true of everybody who's killed for a cause, Rizal, even though he's famous for his gifts and his writings and his, you know, scientific achievements and whatnot, it's really because he was killed by the very regime he was criticizing that puts the spotlight on the point he was trying to make. And that's, I think, why his life has such an impact, even to this day. And this is, it's kind of like a secular version of martyrdom. When someone stands up against evil or stands up for a cause, and the very evil that they're opposing attacks, it makes the point. Except to say, well, see, this is exactly what I was talking about. And so an unjust execution really puts a spotlight on Rizal. Well, that's the holiday today, but the church celebrates this as a feast day. Today is the feast of the Holy Family. So we focus once again on the experience of Jesus in his childhood. When this feast day was put on the calendar, I think that was 100 years ago, not so long ago in church terms, but there was some concern that there was no need for a feast of the Holy Family because Christmas is the feast of the Holy Family, the honoring of Mary is the feast of the Holy Family, and the whole Christmas octave is really honoring the Holy Family. But it seems that it was a prophetic intuition of the church, because since the time when this feast day began to be celebrated, attacks on the family have become much, much worse. So we need this feast day more than ever. We need the model of the Holy Family more than ever, because people don't even seem to understand what family is anymore. Certainly it's a profound insight for us to realize that when God became man, when the Word became flesh, he entered into the normal way that everybody enters into the world, in a family. All of us come from a family. All of us are born into a family. Even people who are orphaned or abandoned, or even the products of artificial reproduction, everyone has a father and a mother. There's no other way to be. Of course, Jesus is a unique case because he has a human mother but not a human father. Still, he entered into normal family life, parents, home life, growing up as a child, work. These are things that we very often take for granted because our experience, especially as children, that's all we know. So that's just normal life. It's only as we get older and we realize that everyone's life is different that we can appreciate and be critical of families, our own and others. I had a unique experience of this yesterday. An old friend of mine called me. I haven't been in touch with him for 45 years. He was a friend of mine in elementary school, grade 7, grade 8. Then we went to separate high schools, separate colleges. We never had any contact. Anyway, he tracked me down and called me up. And so, very interesting, because in some ways we're complete strangers. I mean, we don't know each other at all our whole adult life. And yet, on another level, we know each other very well because we know each other's families. We know our childhood background. And it was enjoyable to be able to talk to someone who knows me and who doesn't know me. Very interesting. But what he does know, he knows my family. And I know his family. So things that we take for granted are so fundamental that it's part of our very identity. And this is true of Jesus. If we want to know Jesus, we have to know Mary and Joseph. If we want to know what his life was like and what he came to do, we have to know his family. Now, as I said, we need this feast more than ever because we need the model of family life set before us as the world's understanding of family breaks down before our very eyes. I see, and I'm sure you do too, see stories in the news that are related to family life. For example, not long ago, I remember reading an article about I think it was just one child, maybe two children. They had been locked up in the house. They were never let out of the house, and so they were fed. They weren't physically abused, but they weren't allowed to thrive. They'd go to school. They were like prisoners in the home. And so the law, when they found out that they charged the parents with criminal negligence or criminal, whatever the terms are in law, I mean, the parents are supposed to help their children grow up and enter into society. And if they don't do it, the parents get the blame. And anyway, the reason why this example came to mind is because the parents, or maybe it was just the mother, said, well, I'm not the only one. What about the other people in the house and in the neighborhood? As if to say, it's not my fault. I mean, no one else helped these children either. And the argument made no sense because it's not everybody's responsibility to raise these children. It's your responsibility. You're the mother. So that's just part of being a mother, part of being a parent. You can't change that definition and claim innocence. Now, and society, when society recognizes children not being treated properly, we will point to the parents and say, what are you doing? Take on your rightful role as parents. I think everybody understands that that's the way it's supposed to be until someone comes along and tries to redefine what a parent is or what a child is. And this is what we see happening. The other extreme, not parents neglecting their children, but parents who are trying to raise their children and the school or the society or the culture is interfering with the rightful duty of the parents. You see this in the West now all the time with these transgender controversies. A child, maybe in early adolescence, decides that he or she is not what he or she is, and the school supports it, and they keep it a secret from the parents. And then the parents say, wait a minute, you can't tell my daughter that she's a boy. And the school says, yes, we can. You have no right to stop her freedom. And then, you see, as if someone else can come along and define what's right for the child or what the rights of the parents are. And they say, well, you can't have it both ways. You can't hold the parents responsible for the children and then say they're not responsible for the children. But this is the confusion that we have in the world. And a lot of it comes from the idea that we can simply decide for ourselves what reality is. It's a very serious error. When I say it so bluntly, you would say, well, of course not. But no, that's exactly how people think now. They think that I can make my own definition of what it means to be a family, my own definition of what it means to be a marriage partner, my own definition of what it means to be a man or a woman. And once we make a decision that goes against what is real, God's plan for the family, God's plan for marriage, we introduce extraordinary disorder into our own lives and into the society. So we have to go back to God's plan for the family. And God's plan for the family is rooted in marriage. Marriage. Family is built on marriage. Society is built on family, but family is built on marriage. And that has to be recognized. What was understood almost universally for all of human history is now no longer recognized. When I talk about marriage, I'm talking about God's plan for marriage, a man and a woman and their children. society, not yet in the Philippines, but in many countries, society has changed the very definition of marriage. The very definition, using the same word for a completely different reality. And that's a very serious problem now. And if anyone questions it, as I'm saying, but doing right now, it's illegal. Not here in this country, but no, I don't know. Like sometimes these recordings, you know, they get put on. I don't know where they get put. maybe I'll get arrested for saying this. But that's what marriage is, and we can't change it. That we don't. That is not up to us. And accepting family life for what it is the only way we can have healthy society. And most of our relationships are not chosen. I mean, we didn't choose our parents. We didn't choose our brothers and sisters. We do choose our marriage partner in modern society, but even that was not decided in other eras of human history. Even the marriage partners were decided by the community or by others. But that's that choice. And without understanding how family works, we end up coming up with substitutes or imposters that just cause so much suffering. Now, we know there's a lot of trials that enter family life. The Holy Family had plenty of trials. This gospel I just read shows the family fleeing the threat that Herod had made against the child. So Joseph is obliged to get up in the night and flee with his wife and son to a foreign country. It's not his fault. He had to bear with the trial that entered into their family life. And then there's these other movements of going back and where to settle and how to survive. And family life is constantly being affected by changes in society and culture and economics and even the weather. Not only that, an experience that was not part of the Holy Family, we, our own sins are become burdens to one another. All of our relationships are affected by our own weaknesses, and we're affected by the weaknesses and sins of other members of the family. Yes, that's all part of it. There's a lot of suffering in family life, but that doesn't change what it is, and it doesn't change its definition. It only means we have to work with our own broken condition and our broken condition of our loved ones, work together with God's help to continue to grow. That's the way to go. To say, no, it isn't a family, or no, this is not my child, or this is not my spouse, or this is not my brother, that's not the solution. Okay, so here it is, Feast of the Holy Family. God's plan is not only to enter into a family, Mary, Joseph, Jesus. God's plan is for every family to be holy, because the family is the expression of God's plan for all relationships. God himself is a family, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And everyone is born into, created into this network, this constellation of relationships that is called to holiness. So we're all called to be holy, all our families are called to be holy, and all of us are called to support one another in this journey of holiness through the ups and downs, through the trials and the victories, through the battles that we have, that we're facing now, even about the most basic definitions. But this is where we are. But the way forward, the hopeful, the joyful way forward, is to recognize what God has in mind for us, the great plan of God for our happiness, and to embrace that with our whole hearts. Journey together with everybody in this family life, the family of the human community, a holy family, a happy family.